Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, February 22nd, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everyone. It is a very wonderful 49 degrees and sunny with birds tweeting here in upstate New York in mid-February, which is quite unusual, but much appreciated. So where did we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Robot Taxes. Gates, Musk, Kill Switches, Google, and AI Aggression. We looked at a bunch of different things. We kind of looked at the progression of robots taking our jobs. Now they keep telling us, don't worry about it. Universal basic income will be the cure to all of this. And even though it's coming, even Obama had all kinds of conversations before he left office about how AI was going to transform our future economy for the new president. Don't worry about it, because everything will be a-okay when we get to feed you grapes and sell you off to the pharmaceutical companies. The last story we looked at, though, we spun into a little bit of AI and how Google's Deep Brain Project is having a little bit of a situation. This was pretty disturbing to me. I kept thinking about this after the show and kind of running it through my head as to what this means. And this really is kind of the scariest part of all of this. We have this technology spinning out of every corner of the globe now. AI, precision medicine, the Brain Project, utilizing this endless computing capacity to crack all of the secrets to genomics and how to flip switches and take control of life itself. We have Georgie Porgy Church sitting over there at the Broad Institute and the Weiss Institute of Harvard and MIT trying to figure out how to create synthetic life from scratch. And they had a secret meeting with 150 scientists last year, and they decided that that was exactly what they were going to do. So this is the conundrum for 2017. This is where we find ourselves now, almost finished with the second month of the year. But it gets even more frightening. I'm going to try. And hey, I'm not a fearmonger at all, but I tend to look at the future prospects and where that's going to leave us. And if you don't look and you just play that ostrich and stick your head in the sand, you're going to get exactly what you hoped for. And that was not a world of plenty. You're going to end up being one of the drugged masses in the 21st century world that are manipulated and controlled even more so than we are now by the oligarchy, who have now declared themselves gods. And it's going to be with our robot overlords in charge. So let's kick this off where we ended the show yesterday. I have a progression of about 15 stories that we are going to try to cruise through today. So put on a seatbelt and get a fresh cup of coffee, because here we go. Google's new AI has learned to become, quote, highly aggressive in stressful situations. Now, anyone has thought that I have been kind of Chicken Little with this AI stuff, I would say that this story and this new development as of February 13, 2017 should be concerning to all of us. Is this how Skynet starts? Well, last year, famed physicist Stephen Hawking issued a warning that the continued advancement of artificial intelligence will either be the best or the worst thing that ever happened to humanity. And like I've pulled out of the box of memories before, good old Elon Musk as well has told us that AI will be summoning the demon. We have all seen Terminator movies and the apocalyptic nightmare that self-aware AI system Skynet wrought upon humanity. And now results from recent behavior tests of Google's new DeepMind AI system are making it clear just how careful we need to be when building robots of the future. In tests late last year, Google's DeepMind AI demonstrated an ability to learn independently from its own memory. We found that there were a few times now, believe it's been three, where it's taught itself over the last few months without any human intervention. It has since been figuring out how to seamlessly mimic a human voice, and now researchers have been testing its willingness to cooperate with others and have revealed that when DeepMind feels like it is about to lose, it opts for, quote, highly aggressive, unquote, strategies to ensure that it comes out on top. The Google team ran 40 million turns of a simple fruit-gathering computer game that asked two DeepMind agents to compete against each other to gather as many virtual apples as they could. And they found that things went smoothly so long as there were enough apples to go around. But as soon as the apples began to dwindle, the two agents turned aggressive, using laser beams to knock each other out of the game and steal all the apples. You can watch the gathering game in the video below. So this will be the first link in the notes of the show today. You guys can check it out if you want. But now, these are some trigger-happy fruit gatherers, I would say. But hey, what is going to happen if the shit hits the fan? You know, we are the creators of AI, and us as humans are typically warring creatures, historically speaking, and we tend to fight over resources, especially when they become scarce. Survival of the fittest is something that is built into us as a living species. So why would we think that that would not apply to this new organism, this new living sentient creature that we are creating? Why would we not believe that that would happen to them? And that's what concerns me. We were talking about kill switches yesterday and some of the technologies that they are working on to quote unquote have a kill switch for AI. But I hate to tell you, Jenny, once you let this puppy out into the nether regions of the interwebs, it's going to be really hard to pull a plug unless you take down the entire network. And once it's out in the network, it would just be like an infection as it spread to every orifice. It's going to be hard to play whack-a-mole and to shut this thing completely down without something like a flamethrower. Anyway, interestingly, if an agent successfully tags its opponent with a laser beam, no extra reward is given. So thank God they're not rewarding the AI for killing. It simply knocks the opponent out of the game for a set period, which allows the successful agent to collect more apples. If the agents left the laser beam unused, they could theoretically end up with an equal share of apples, which is what the less intelligent iterations of DeepMind opted to do. So, hey, when DeepMind wasn't so smart, he didn't start killing people. He was docile and just kind of shared, and everyone ended up with equal shares of apples anyway. It was only when the Google team tested more and more complex forms of DeepMind that sabotage, greed, and aggression set in. Now, how scary is that? We have an electronic version of the worst traits in humans. I mean, this is not good, people, and they're going to be smarter, bigger, faster than us. And once they become self-replicating, which is some of the stuff they've been experimenting with in the lab, this can be the nightmare on steroids. Like, no wonder they're planning on getting off this rock and investing billions of dollars into space research and radiation protection. As Rhett Jones reports from Gizmodo, when researchers used a smaller DeepMind network as the agents, there was a greater likelihood for peaceful coexistence. But when they used larger, more complex networks as the agents, the AI was far more willing to sabotage its opponents early and get the lion's share of virtual apples. Well, I hate to tell you, but what that tells me is that we want to nip globalism in the bud immediately and stay local. Did you hear what that just said? When you had a smaller network that you were dealing with, we tended to share, well, they, AI, tended to share more easily. But when you had a larger, complex network like globalism, they tended to sabotage the opponents and have war to go after all the apples. The researchers suggest that the more intelligent the agent, the more able it was to learn from its environment, allowing it to use some highly aggressive tactics to always come out on top. This model shows that some aspects of human-like behavior begin to emerge as a product of the environment and of its learning. Less aggressive policies emerge from learning in relatively abundant environments, with less possibility for costly action. The greed motivation reflects the temptation to take out the rival and collect all the apples for oneself. DeepMind was then tasked with playing a second video game. It could only get worse. And this one was called Wolfpack. And this time, there were three AI agents. Two of them played as wolves, and one of them played as the prey. Oh, what could go wrong? Unlike gathering apples, this game actively encouraged cooperation, because if both wolves were near the prey when it was captured, they both received a reward regardless of which one actually took it down. And that's what happens in a pack mentality. You know, don't think wolves are happy, fuzzy creatures or lions or tigers or bears. Oh, my. But the reason bears don't live in packs, but wolves do, and so do wild cats. And one of the reasons why they do that is because it is easier for survival for the pack to try to take down prey and they all share it than it would be to live individually. Same things with humans. You know, we have a society, and when we live all together and we cooperate, it is much easier than for one of us to be living in the woods trying to do everything on our own. The idea in this game is that prey is pretty dangerous, and a lone wolf cannot overcome it, but it is at risk of losing its carcass to scavengers. However, when the two wolves capture the prey together, they can better protect the carcass from scavengers and hence receive a higher reward. So just as DeepMind learned from gathering that aggression and selfishness netted them the most favorable results in that particular environment, they also learned from Wolfpack that cooperation in killing, oh God, can also be the key to greater individual success in certain situations. What are we doing? Why would we be teaching artificial intelligence the best way to start killing and winning? This is the beginnings of Skynet. This is the beginnings of the end. This is what we should not be doing right now. We are teaching this synthetic brain, and that's pretty much what AI is. You know, I have people out there who keep insisting to me that AI is never going to become more intelligent than humans. Well, keep smoking on your pipe dream, because I hate to tell you, AI is already smarter than an average American. We've read a couple stories on that, and they've come up with new algorithms to allow AI to come to conclusions using some, there was some fancy name for it based upon some mathematician's theory, but it allowed them to come to a conclusion very accurately using much, much fewer algorithms than before. And they can write and rewrite their own code and come up with better code in the flash of an eye. And it's only going to be a matter of time, people. We are at a point of exponential returns. Remember, we have technology creating technology now. And as it starts teaching itself, just like it taught itself, and this was even this Google Deep Brain, on how to translate between two languages it knew nothing about, and it came up with its own Rosetta Stone to be able to do that translation. It also came up with its own super-duper encryption to be able to work between two ciphers. You know, it's not going to be too long, people. Now we're teaching it how to kill and track, steal, all the bad things about humanity. Why would we be doing this? Well, while these are just simple little computer games, wink, the message is clear. Put different AI systems in charge of competing interests in real-life situations, and it could be all-out war if their objectives are not balanced against the overall goal of benefiting us humans above all else. And yes, like I said, Isaac Asimov's number one law was to not harm humanity. And that is a big concern from people such as Elon Musk and others in that Future of Life Institute, because it'll be the End of Life Institute if we don't nip this in the bud ASAP. Think traffic lights trying to slow things down and driverless cars trying to find the fastest route. Both need to take each other's objectives into account to achieve the safest and most efficient result for society. And you know, I was just thinking that as we're letting AI now infiltrate every function in our lives, and eventually it will be, you know, we've talked about so many different things where AI can be applied, not only from self-driving cars to business to medicine to financials to banking to whatever, job interviews and dealing with the public, delivering pizzas even, you know, and warfare. We need to be concerned about where that is going to leave us. These machines from all these different walks of life are going to be communicating without human intervention and sharing information, thinking, evolving. And is there going to be a stop to that? Is there going to be a set of brakes that if something goes awry, we'll be able to pull a plug? And I'm going to say, I think it's going to get outside of our hands because it will become a very complex network. Many things happening across the globe every single second of the day that I don't think once this large boulder starts rolling down the hill, I don't think there's going to be stopping it. You can get in front of it with the biggest tank and that tank's going to get flattened because there is just too much velocity behind it. In the early days, it is still the early days for DeepMind, which again, should be another concern. This is just the beginning. And the team at Google has yet to publish their study in a peer-reviewed paper, but these initial results show that just because we build them doesn't mean that robots and AI systems will automatically have our best interests at heart. Ding, 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 ding. Instead, we need to build helpful natures into our machines and anticipate any loopholes that could see them reaching for future laser beams. And as founders of OpenAI, Elon Musk's new research initiative dedicated to the ethics of artificial intelligence said back in 2015, quote, good old Elon, here he comes. AI systems today have impressive but narrow capabilities. We talked about that narrow versus general AI. It seems that we'll keep whittling away at their constraints. And in the extreme case, they will reach human performance on virtually every intellectual task. And it is hard to fathom how much human level AI could benefit society. And it is also equally hard to imagine how much it could damage society if built or used incorrectly. So tread carefully, humans. And it's not even funny. It is very disturbing to me. So we had Stephen Hawking and Elon Musk come out. They are now backing 23 principles to ensure that humanity benefits from AI. We looked at some of this yesterday. I did not get to the 23 Asimolar, I think that's how you say it, Asimolar, Asimolar AI principles that they had discussed, but let's look at those. Number one, research issues. Number one is the research goal, and that is the goal of AI research should be to create not undirected intelligence, but beneficial intelligence. And that is correct. We were just looking at what could happen if we allowed AI to start learning on its own, start interacting without us giving it any type of morals. We didn't give it any set of morals. We just said, go, here's some apples. Go fight for them and see what happens. And that didn't turn out too well. One of these days, we're going to find out that we are going to be in that game. We're going to be the apples, and we don't want to be the apples. Number two, research funding. Of course, we have every tech billionaire and tech mogul investing in this type of technology, venture capitalist firms all over the globe. This is going to be in the next 3 to 4 years where the next bazillion dollars comes from. And this will be utilizing AI in every facet of life, including healthcare, including potential future governments. We never even got to any of those stories because remember, Humans and their emotions make bad decisions, but AI doesn't have emotions and they are logical. I would be very careful where we put our research funding. Remember, a lot of the sprinkle funding is coming from DARPA. Sprinkle funding in all these universities and different industries. We have the next coming of the Industrial Revolution that's going to be smart factories everywhere. And we have AI, smart factories already working its way into the creation of new molecules and new life forms. Be very cautious here, Johnny, because we are at the cusp of where we could either make or break the future of humanity. And I don't say that lightly. You know, sometimes I joke about it and whatever, and little Johnny's leave me comments about how my show's hysterical because I'm joking, but I'm not joking, people. We are at a point that we have never, ever been at before in the history of man, at least in written history. Who knows? There may have been a million civilizations before us that just got wiped out. But at least in written history, down to chopping in the tablets, I don't know of any super digital oracle that ran the show that we were aware of that could easily destroy humanity with the push of a button. We are at that point. From so many different facets right now, these disruptive technologies are all in our face and they are getting ready to be unleashed by the ones in charge, all in the name of saving the world. But I think it's to enslave the world and transform it, as they've said, to human 2.0. So, number two, research funding investments in AI should be accompanied by funding for research on ensuring that its beneficial use is used, including thorny questions in computer science, economics, law, ethics, and social studies, such as follows. A, how can we make future AI systems highly robust so that they do what we want without malfunctioning or getting hacked? Good point there. B, how can we grow our propensity through automation while maintaining people's resources and purpose? And we discussed yesterday all about universal basic income and robots taking all the jobs and how people are going to lose their purpose in life if they don't have anything to work toward when there is no reward of that dangling carrot of a paycheck every month or that reward of being able to grow and expand your mind and learn for some sort of reward at the end, pat on the back. Even a few dollars, it makes a difference. People don't get motivated and they start to get bored and unruly if they don't feel like they are being utilized appropriately. C, how can we update our legal systems to be more fair and efficient, to keep pace with AI and to manage the risks associated with AI? And that would be some AI crime. I know somewhere in here there's a story about crime. About crime being perpetrated by artificial intelligence in the future. And maybe we'll find that here in a little bit. And D, what set of values should AI be aligned with? And what are the legal and ethical statuses that AI should have? And that concerns me. Honestly, I don't think that we should be giving AI legal status. You know, they are talking about making AI kind of like a corporation where a corporation has personhood. And I am not so sure about that. Bill Gates was talking yesterday about the robots who take your jobs should be paying taxes as well. Well, that would lead me to believe that this personhood thing is closer than we imagine. Let's give it a tax ID number. And let's figure out how many carbon quotient COs. So we can start kicking in to pay the universal basic income to the human whose job he took. And remember, you know, income could be pretty close to apples if that robot starts feeling like you're taking all of his income apples. You know, those apples that he could buy other things with. Maybe he's going to snuff you out with his lasers eventually because you, puny human meat bag. So they said we're gonna have the tin cans and the meat bags, and this meat bag is gonna be just soaking off the tin cans. I don't think Atlas is gonna be too happy about that. All right, number three of the 23, and this is a lot, and we might have to whiz through these 23 S. Moller AI principles. Number three, science policy link. There should be constructive and healthy exchange between AI researchers and policymakers, and that's kind of where Elon Musk has kind of stood apart from the crowd with a lot of these other tech billionaires because they have a commission going on right now. I don't know if it was started with Obama. Obama did bring a lot of the tech corporate heads to the White House for the first time that I ever remember, 25 years in technology, where they all sat down at a table, and it was back when the Obamacare website was all screwed up, and they were trying to sue. Consumers were crying over the lack of privacy from the federal government, demanding information on consumers from tech companies. The tech companies wanted a CYA moment, met with the White House, said, look, give us immunity from being sued by consumers for privacy breaches, and say that it's all in the name of national security. And there was kind of some behind-the-scenes agreement inked. So all these tech companies got sucked right into the federal infrastructure. And now, of course, it's all about keeping you safe. It's all about protecting us from terrorists under every bed and self-radicalized terrorists on the internet. Got to lock it down from hackers and crackers. And so it's got to be one big happy family, all the tech companies in with the feds. But there was a commission. And there have been a couple commissions. We had a commission on ethics for artificial intelligence that we found out the president of Penn U, and that is the Pennsylvania University that is right in the middle of a lot of AI and CRISPR research. The president, I don't remember her name, she was on the ethics board at the White House. But we also had Elon Musk, who was one of the few on this AI technology commission that they had formed, who did not step down in protest to Trump being elected because Musk thinks that there is value for having a voice on this board. And I would have to agree with him. If everyone turns their backs on, regardless of who's in charge, that's not going to lead to good things for everybody else. So Musk is there. Musk is encouraging that the researchers and the policymakers have a healthy exchange, but my concern is that the war machine is going to lead it all. Of course, it's always this mantra of keeping us safe, and the war machine is all about killing. Remember that it is not about happy AI. It is about self-directed AI, where they could do more with less on the battlefield. And be able to detect and destroy. A lot of the cyber patrol is now been rolled into the military realm. And remember, a hack attack is now considered an act of war. So we should be very concerned about all of this. Number five, and that would be race avoidance. Teams developing AI systems should actively cooperate to avoid corner cutting on safety standards. And remember, too, this isn't just in the United States. This is a global phenomenon. And one of my concerns about all these new 21st century technologies is that there is a new arms race going on. It's not nukes anymore. It's not necessarily chemical weapons of the past. We are now talking about DNA type weapons, CRISPR on steroids, and electronic weapons, backdoor keys that can get in, hack, crack other people's systems, as well as surveil you. I mean, there is a competition, an arms race going on between a lot of the different countries that we compete with right now that is making this a more and more dangerous world in the 21st century. Number six is safety. AI systems should be safe and secure throughout their operational lifetime, and also verifiably so where applicable and feasible. Number seven, failure transparency. I think we're gonna speed these up. If an AI system causes harm, it should be possible to ascertain why. Number eight, judicial transparency. Any involvement by an autonomous system in the judicial decision-making process. And, we read about this, the future of AI judges. Now think about that one for a minute. How would you like to go up in front of an AI judge who's not swayed by emotions or circumstances, just by the letter of the law? And as we're having this crisis in law enforcement where they are swayed by the color of your skin or by your religion or by just what they see without maybe not knowing the entire circumstance behind what is going on. How many times do we read stories where someone called the police and they end up being the one who gets beaten and arrested until the whole situation gets straightened out? We have a crisis now with law enforcement. Well, don't worry about it, because as we release the robot police officers and the robot judges and the robot judiciary department, the attorney general, hey, it'll be all better. It'll be all better that the robots run the show. It'll be like Judge Dredd. Guys, when I read this stuff, it just horrifies me. I can't even go on with these because it's just a joke. This is never going to happen. And as they roll this stuff all out, we're all going to be just hunky-dory going along. It's going to fix all of us, going to fix the fact that no one's even going to have to work anymore, including judges or law enforcement. We'll just have the drones patrolling and the Atlas bots and the online judge. You just log in, let them scan your face, bloop, and they can look at your emotions through your micro expressions to determine whether or not you are lying. They can go through all the surveillance footage that they caught on you over the last, I don't know, 3 months from 55 different sources and determine whether or not you were involved in any crime in a few seconds of scanning its databanks. It's just horrifying. And then all they got to do is put you in mind prison. We had read about that as well. I don't know. I found that story again a few days ago, but it was like within 8 hours, you could live 1,000 years of torture in a mind prison in your brain without ever having to go to jail. It's just horrifying. All right, let's move along here because I really want to wrap some of this up today. Experts predict by 2040, more crime will be committed by machines than by humans. So, yeah, let's give all the keys to the machine. Sounds like a good idea. With the Internet of Things integrating technology into our daily lives more and more, the widespread use of artificial intelligence could bring with it more AI-powered crime. Experts predict that 35% of jobs now done by humans, and we found yesterday up to 55%, could be replaced by robots in the future, increasing the potential for AI crime. And if Google's DeepMind experiment that we just read about was any indication, it's going to be more than just AI stealing a few qubits here and there from some AI equity trading happening on Wall Street. They're going to be popping us for our apples in a dark alley somewhere. Meat bags versus the tin cans. For the past couple decades, the trend in technological development has been toward maximizing the capabilities of computers and machines to do tasks that people would rather not do, or at least ones that machines could do cheaper. In an interview with publication Ronkatour, Chief Strategy and Innovation Officer for the Future Laboratory, Tracy Fellows predicts that 35% of jobs currently done by humans could be taken over by robots one day, and these would include ones that are tedious or dangerous, saving innumerable hours and lives. Yes, it's all for our betterment. But the landmark achievement of the 21st century, arguably artificial intelligence, with its writings of some strings of code, machines can now perceive their environment with robot googly eyes and robot ears and robot sensors, process relevant information, and execute actions that provide the highest probability of success. But further innovations in artificial intelligence are often driven by the elimination of human error in day-to-day life. Well, rise of the machines. Well, most machines powered by AI are programmed to do specific jobs, and that is that narrow AI. These technological wonders could also be commanded to learn, and that is what is already happening exponentially. Powerful programs could be wired to learn how to bypass security measures and wreak havoc with classified information. GPS telemetry, sensor input, etc. And what is more problematic is that this coincides with the integration of the Internet of Things, the presence of internet in day-to-day living, with more devices being retooled to facilitate easier living. We are surrounding ourselves with more ways to be victimized by cybercrime. And you know, this is where we read about that Cyber Grand Challenge artificial intelligence that was created by Carnegie Mellon University that won the $1 million prize back this summer in Vegas. That was mayhem. And we found out the other day that mayhem has been sippy cupped released to the internet. They have started utilizing mayhem, which is the shape shifting immune system for the internet and the future Internet of Things, to keep us safe, to find vulnerabilities, to attack and destroy anyone who is trying to access the system who is not authorized. Guys, we are going to be victimized by not only rogue AI, but also be careful what you ask for, because yes, problem, reaction, solutions. Now we have this mayhem that they are starting to roll out. They have let the genie vapor out of the bottle, and soon it's going to be spread. It's like an infection. It's a virus to every corner of the globe. And once that happens, I don't know if we are ever going to be able to stop what ensues from there. And if this stuff is self-evolving, it is learning on its own. It reacts to circumstance and then makes itself better. Be afraid. Be afraid. I don't know what else to say. I don't know how we're going to compete. We're going to have to go full out Luddite. And even at that point, you know, as they start launching these autonomous vehicles and these flying drones and other things, and all these high-tech satellites with super HD cameras like that Argus that was developed by DARPA, there will be nowhere to run and nowhere to hide. They'll be able to find you no matter where you are. As the good guys become more active in remediating threats before hackers launch their attacks, espionage and digital fraud will become far less economically beneficial for the bad guys. That'll give us a far better chance of keeping them out. So don't worry, mayhem being released will be the best thing that ever happened to you. Just go back to sleep, Johnny. We're going to take it all over, and then you won't have to worry about it. You'll just get your little implant, and we'll make you all better. And just like Elon Musk says, he thinks that humans need to become cyborgs or risk irrelevance. We had talked about this. Elon Musk is telling us that as we have artificial intelligence rolling out, humans' intelligence is going to be eclipsed by AI. And if we are going to communicate directly with these machines, we better augment ourselves or risk becoming irrelevant and potentially a pet or even dead. He is working on a solution right now that is called Neuralace. Neuralace is able to augment you so you can talk to the machine and utilize the cloud computing and cloud learning to become just as smart, if not smarter, than AI and keep pace. Good old Ray Kurzweil, we've talked about him before as well, always telling us we want nanobots in our brain to make us godlike by 2030s. Good old Ray has been pushing that forever. And now, don't forget, he is head director of engineering at Google, working on machine learning and a lot of these other things. We have the Verily division, which is their mad science department, where we have good old Tommy Insel, the former director of the National Institute of Mental Health, working on curing mental, quote unquote, mental disease and diagnosis through the sound of your voice in a smart app. So it's not going to be too long, Johnny. Here, you need to take some of these new nutraceuticals or get your implant, and you will be all better. Well, I found a news story, February 15, 2017, out of fizz.org. Oh, you gotta love it. New ultra-flexible probes form a reliable scar-free integration with the brain. Welcome the 21st century, because here it comes. Engineering researchers at the University of Austin in Texas have designed an ultra-flexible nano-electronic thread called a NET brain probe that can achieve more reliable long-term neural recording, ding-a-ling-a-ling, than existing probes, and don't elicit scar formation when they are implanted in your brain. Well, thank goodness. Researchers described their findings in a research article published February 15th in Science Advances. The team, we'll go through all kinds of people from different engineering schools, have developed new probes that have mechanical compliances approaching that of brain tissue and are more than 1,000 times more flexible than other neural probes. Well, thank goodness. This ultra flexibility leads to an improvement in the ability to reliably record and track the electrical activity of individual neurons in the brain for long periods of time. Well, all the things we've talked about, like neurological surveillance in the 21st Century Cures Act and being able to record and upload your brain after death, something that Kurzweil's been talking about and some of this DARPA research, to be able to record the brains of soldiers, then try to reprogram them after PTSD. All makes a lot of sense now. So now we have these flexible, ultra-flexible neural probes that can do a really great job of reliably recording and tracking electrical activity in the neurons. There is a growing interest in developing long-term tracking of individual neurons for what? Oh, neural interface applications, maybe like Elon Musk's neural lace, so we can compete with AI with augmentation, such as extracting neural control signals for amputees, of course, to control high-performance prostheses, and that is a DARPA project. It also opens up new possibilities for following the progression of neurovascular and neurodegenerative diseases, such as, of course, stroke, Parkinson's, and Alzheimer's. It's always done in the name of those. But one of the problems with conventional probes is their size and mechanical stiffness, and they cause scar tissue. And their larger dimensions and stiffer structures often causes damage around the tissue they encompass. Additionally, while it is possible for conventional electrodes, and those were those little nanowires we read about, to record brain activity for months, they often provide unreliable and degraded recordings. It has been challenging for conventional electrodes to electrophysiologically track individual neurons for more than a few days. So, guys, put on a seatbelt, because we have these new ultra-flexible brain probes that can record and track neuronal activity for long periods of time. And, hey, you know, Elon Musk thinks we should merge with the machine and become cyborgs. Well, 3D printing has taken a couple few steps forward. 3D printed skin now leads the way toward artificial organs. Researchers claim that additive manufacturing can now produce functional skin, and the first internal organs may be ready within 6 short years. The initial hype surrounding 3D printing may have started to fade, but guess what? Researchers are using a technique to create living tissue, and it is showing encouraging results. And we read about this a long time ago, using those sugars to create a scaffold for like a liver or kidney, and then using stem cells in a 3D inkjet nozzle printer to take those stem cells, put it into the right shape, and let them grow. They were having a lot of success in the lab before, but it sounds like they have made some leaps and bounds. The basic premise: insert the correct cells into a polymer or a gel, print them out in a 3D structure, and then allow the cells to grow into a living entity. And if such a feat can be achieved, it could provide an unlimited supply of organs for transplant patients and remove the need for donors. And I'm going to add to that, as well as remove the need for human animal chimeras. We've read about the pigs that they were putting human cells into the pig embryos to try to grow new livers and things. Well, beyond 3D printed skin and organs and some of the notable achievements that they have made with creating blood vessels and synthetic ovaries, they are now looking at 3D printing things such as spines. I was just reading the other day a 3D printed replacement for a woman's damaged spine from disease to a disability. Human innovation continues to push forward, and in all walks of science, researchers are achieving new firsts over and over again. And yeah, we found that out over the last few years. Never before seen. Check it out. Here it comes. This is a brave new world. So now doctors in India, one of our offshore mad science departments, a country that has been basking in its record-breaking satellite launch, have now completed the nation's first 3D-printed spinal restoration surgery. The patient, a 32-year-old Indian woman, lost her ability to walk to a severe case of tuberculosis. The disease commonly affects the lungs, but it traveled to her spinal cord when her immune system was particularly weakened by drugs that she was prescribed for infertility. The tuberculosis compromised her first, second, and third vertebrae, removing support for both her skull and her lower spine. The damaged spinal cord resulted in a curvature posture, weakened her limbs, and an involuntary sliding of the head. And if left untreated, her condition would have been essentially a death sentence. Hey, maybe that guy who's lining up in Russia for the head transplant should look at getting a 3D printed spine first before they hack his head off and put it on a donor body. Oh my God. So they have printed this spine, and this woman is expected to fully recover in a few weeks and live a normal life. Her journey is truly one for the history books. And look out, guys, because as they are discovering how to 3D print body parts and organs and real skin that interacts with its environment, what do you think that's going to do for the tin cans as they start making synthetic human hybrids that are a cross between the machine and the meatbags? Because I'm going to tell you, it's going to happen. People like Georgie Church are going to make sure. Scientists say now it is time we discuss creating humans from stem cells. Oh, yes. It is not science fiction anymore. A paper landed in my inbox, and that is the author of the story, Rafi Letzner, this week, and that was January 20th, 2017, with a startling premise. Soon, stem cells swabbed from human beings' cheeks or skin could be used to culture germ cells for sperm and egg, and from there, create a human being. And we looked last year at them already creating sperm and egg cells from the pluripotent stem cells scraped from your hand. And in fact, human and primate studies may have been met with limited success, but there have been real live mice created through this process. And every indication is that human beings will soon follow. So imagine a young girl who came down with cancer and has been subjected to chemotherapy and radiation and then recovered. And now she is a woman who is contemplating having a child but is infertile. Well, like an individual today, you would require a donor egg. But in the future, there would be no need for this complicated and expensive process of receiving a donor egg from a third person. Nope. We just swab your cheek or scrape your hands and create as many eggs as you might need to then create an IVF human in a petri dish without it ever having to come from a fallopian tube. Well, we also found the other day, February 15, 2017, U.S. scientists have now cautiously backed permanently editing genes in humans. And yes, we talked about that before with CRISPRing. But one of the things that CRISPR had banned was germline editing, and that would be cells that could be passed down through reproduction to next generations. Well, apparently that isn't an ethical question anymore. In a controversial move, a senior U.S. scientific committee has given the green light to one of the most contentious forms of genomic editing, where the genetic changes made to human embryos will then be inherited by following generations. And right now it's going to be in the name of curing disease. Like, let's say you have some genetic disease that is inheritable, like Huntington's. Well, maybe they can flip a few switches and get rid of that with CRISPR-Cas9. So you don't pass that down to future generations. But one of the big risks to this was that it would be opening the door. Like I said, Johnny wants blue eyes and brown hair, where a society could make gene editing techniques where it could be leading to a dystopian future of designer babies, where rich people can afford genetic protections and poor members of society could not. These type of scenarios used to be science fiction, and they used to seem far away off. As hypothetical, says biotechnologist Marcy Donofsky from the Center of Genetics and Society. But actually, right now, she seems to think that they are urgent social justice questions. Quote, "We are going to be creating a world in which the already privileged and the affluent can use these high-tech procedures to make children with biological advantages." And remember, it could be anything. And as they start cracking these keys, they'll know exactly which switches to flip. And she says this scenario that plays out is not a pretty one. So how are we going to put the stops on this? And that is a question. Now, of course, they're going to use some of these clinical trials that they are doing right now to further the research in the future. Two infants, January 25th, 2017, treated with universal immune cells have now had their cancer vanish. In a medical first, these children were treated with the genetically engineered T cells from another person. Doctors in London say they have cured two babies of leukemia in the world's first attempt to treat cancer with genetically engineered immune cells from a donor. The ready-made approach could pose challenges to companies, including Juno Therapies and Novartis, each of which has spent tens of millions of dollars pioneering treatments that require collection of patients' own blood cells and then reinfusing them. And that was something they were also doing at Penn U. But put on a seatbelt, people, because as they have done this, and now they have just a little sippy cup of success, don't think that this isn't going to be all balls out for someone to find the billion-dollar cure to disease. All right, and last but not least, and this is going to be where people like Billy Gates and other rich tech billionaires who are investing in longevity medicine and curing death as a disease are going to find some interest. Cell death now might be reversible, and scientists are trying to find out why. Well, this tells us something important about cancer. It says a mysterious cell process called anastasis, which is Greek for rising to life, challenges our idea of life being a linear match toward death and suggests that cell death can actually be reversed under certain conditions, essentially allowing cells to undie. Even as the cell is shriveling up in response to radiation, toxins, and other stresses, it can do, in some cases, undo the process of dying and repair itself if the stress is taken away before the cell is completely gone, says cell biologist Denise Montell of the University of California at Santa Barbara in the field of people studying apoptosis. And that is the program Cell Death. This program, Cell Suicide Mechanism, that's what they call it. It has been a tenet in that field that once the cell triggers this death process, it is irreversible. But in her research, beginning with a paper published by the Journal of Molecular Biology of the Cell in 2012, it is starting to show otherwise. Montel's lab wants to see if they can use anastasis, the opposite of apoptosis, to salvage hard-to-replace cells in the human body, which could be important in treating ischemia or heart attacks, where cells will start dying, and this could also provide an accidental chilling glimpse into hows and whys of cancer. Every day, the billions of cells in our body actively decide whether they should continue to live or die. Damaged cells must die. Otherwise, we might get cancer or other diseases through programmed cell death process, but the most famous, which is apoptosis. And there are many cells that we do not want to die. And this is particularly true for neurons in our brain, which have to last our whole life, or for the cells in our heart. If too many cells die, then we develop diseases like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. But once apoptosis begins, a critical molecule called the executioner caspase, is activated within the cell, and it does exactly what it sounds like. The caspase goes around the cell, dicing up cell parts, and the cell starts to shrivel. Eventually, it will break into little pieces, and then the other cells come and gobble up the pieces. Oh, my God. So there are many unanswered questions. We have seen anastasis now in 12 different types of mammalian cells where we can bring them back to life. And the fact that it can be observed in human and fruit fly cells suggests that anastasis is an incredibly ancient process by a common ancestor that must date back millions of years that we have yet to discover exactly how it works. But if it turns out that anastasis is the process responsible for coming back after cancer remission, we got a brave new world on our hands. Well, guys,